It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Here they come on 3rd and 5. Wilson, boy, somehow escapes. He's going to run for it. Plenty of green grass. Wilson stays in bounds. He's still going. And he's in. Touchdown. Zach Wilson pulling a magic trick.
Down the middle, he's got it. Elijah Moore. The 20. The 10. The 5. Touchdown.
Tune is buried. That was Sauce Gardner coming in hot. Garrett Wilson. Here he goes. Goodbye. And hello, end zone.
Van Dyke swarmed, swallowed, and sacked. Guess who? You only got one guess. Jermaine Johnson.
Here's Breece Hall looking for history. Hall with his 24th straight game with a rushing touchdown into the NCAA record books.
Listen. Thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for part 3 of the mailbag with our friend who hosts Blewett's Blitz over at JetsXFactor.com, Mr. Joe Blewett. So let's jump right back into the mailbag. Next question comes in from Coffee and Jets. He says, thinking of Connor McGovern's performance, Joe, when you are watching film on centers, how can you assess if they're doing their job in terms of setting protections, or can you only really tell how they're performing with their own blocking? Joe, I'll let you answer this one.
Yeah, so I think a really important part, and it really depends on how much time you have to watch film, because let's be completely honest, and I'll be honest. Do I watch film with the same really driven intent that I do like week 1 to week 17? No, not necessarily. There are some days where I'm tired. There are some days I'm lazy or I want to get through it. I'm not going to pay as much attention, but I think a really good thing to do is one, look through quotes in the media and see exactly who's calling the offense, who's setting the protections. If it's just the center, if it's a mixture of quarterback and center and they communicate, if it's just quarterback. So that's a good way to look at who's exactly calling those plays. And I think another part of that, again, if you have time, and for any of the all 22 film watchers out there, the way that Game Pass is set up is absolutely brutal. It's the dumbest setup of anything I've ever seen in my entire life. So to go between broadcast and the game film is brutal. But if you have the time, go to the broadcast and try to listen to who's making those calls. See if it's McGovern or Zach Wilson. But for the most part, you go to the media, see who calls it, and then look at the play results. Obviously, you have to understand the blocking assignments. And you have to understand the differences between a guy just locking on the backside, zone blocking, or shuffling in their gap protection. You have to know the differences between 2-jet and 3-jet and running back protections and all this stuff, which is really intricate. So if you hear McGovern calling, he's calling the right thing. But then, you know, I don't know, Elijah Vera Tucker or Lakin Tomlinson overset their assignment. It's not necessarily McGovern's fault because he called the right thing, but the individual did not execute the plan properly. So it's kind of a weird mixture of looking for the media to see who calls it, listening to see who calls it, and then looking at the outcome and trying to see what he called. Because listen, you could call the wrong protection. Like you could call a 2-jet where the center slides left, and really you thought that based on the defensive alignments, he should have slid right, and the running back should have been set opposite, and then he fills in from the left side instead of the right side. It could be the littlest type of things that can matter depending on the defensive front you see. Typically with young teams, it's obvious, or young quarterback, it is the center. It's hard to quantify. It's really intricate. You really have to dive deeply into that, but I don't think he's necessarily had an issue with calling protections. I think the Jets have had, and I don't know if that is even part of the questions, but in general, you know, when you have guys like GVR out there, it's going to make the center, air quotes, calling the protections look bad.
GVR is an above average guard. Haven't you heard?
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that the Jets don't need corners. I've heard a bunch of crazy things this offseason, but yeah, I'm surprised they weren't able to bring back GVR. You know, an average guard is a backup. I would feel comfortable with them. But yeah, that was one of the more crazy things I've heard this offseason.
Next question comes in from one of our writers over at PlayLikeAJet.com, Sharman Phillip. He says, what do you guys think about the idea that the best defense is a good offense? Yes, obviously, if your offense is really good, it makes life easier on the defense. But people keep talking like defense doesn't matter in the NFL, that it's an offensive league, and defense is just an afterthought. And yes, I agree, it's an offensive league, certainly. But look at what happened with the Kansas City Chiefs. They ran into a Bengals team that knew how to defend them and knocked them out. The Bengals actually played really good defense throughout the playoffs, and they were this close to winning the Super Bowl. Now, the Bengals were able to score points too, but my point is, while offense may be king, defense absolutely is important. So, yes, having a really good offense helps your defense, but I also think having a really good defense helps the offense. You heard Robert Saleh say that. If the defense does its job and they're able to make sure that the opposing team gives the Jets the ball back more often, I think that helps Zach Wilson. It certainly helps the offense's confidence as well. So it goes hand in hand. You could argue that offense is more important, but I don't think it's just offense. It's got to be a little of both. You cannot have a bad defense and expect to win. Yes, it's possible. If you have an incredible offense like we saw from the Chiefs, you can win a Super Bowl that way. But more often than not, you need at least a respectable defense.
Yeah, and like you said, like a good defense can also be a good offense. Like how much was really asked out of Mark Sanchez, you know, in his two first years with the number one defense and, you know, obviously the good offense with the offensive line, the running game, et cetera. But like, I feel like people are, and like obviously, like, yes, like, okay, a good defense good offense taking or being good defense. Yeah, technically, like you said, if they're controlling the ball for 12 minutes every single drive and the other team is knocking on the field, great. But how often is that going to happen? Like every situation is different. Every game is different. Like people are very reactionary. And one of the games people bring up was, okay, well, the Bills had a good defense. Look at their safety combo and look what the Chiefs did in the playoffs. Defense doesn't matter. But at the same time, just the last Super Bowl before that was, you know, the Pats playing the Rams, or was that two years before that? I forget exactly. But the score was like 12-9 or whatever it was. So did defense matter there? Or, you know, like, so it's all dependent upon the situation. But yes, I guess technically a good offense is a good defense because they're not on the field. But like you said, you want to balance. Like if anything, like if I could take, okay, a team with a really good offense but a bad defense, or a really good defense but a bad offense, or average at both, I'm taking average at both. So I think it's a fine dance between the two parties. Both matter to the other.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Rod Lopp. He says, how do you think the Jets will approach the run defense with the current defensive line personnel? Is there any chance they can be successful at stopping the run game as their current roster stands? What do you think, Joe?
Last year, they were absolutely miserable. Again, now they're adjusting from a 3-4 to a 4-3. And if you're not going to, like, with a 4-3 penetrating front, especially if you don't have linebackers, like, for the defensive line to be good, like they're either going to be good or bad in the run game. Like, I don't really feel like there's an in-between younger 4-3 team with not good linebackers or safeties behind them. So they're definitely put in a tough position, last year. And then this year going into it, listen, I don't expect them to be overly successful. And it's one of my concerns. Like, we hear all this stuff about how light the Jets are in camp with like 7-on-7s and throwing the ball. And then you pair that with a young team who's not tackling a lot, going to play the AFC North right off the jump. It is concerning. And especially when you talk about the personnel, you know, they struggled mightily last year. And, oh, by the way, Scott, as you know, they only lost their best run defender. And they didn't do anything to really replace him, unless you consider Solomon Thomas a capable replacement for Foley Fatukasi, which, if so, I would put that in the crack pipe. Past that, I think that the players can be more successful because now you have Q, who's more used to taking aggressive steps up the field. Where when we talked about his Bama tape, Scott, we're talking about him in that light stance and playing more read and react, and how successful he was with that. Where again, everything is just amplified in that 4-3 scheming, and everything just has to process quicker. So for guys like Quincy or Q and Shepard and Rankins and all these guys to be in the system year two, I think they do take a jump up just because of their familiarity with the system. But at the same time, can I see them being like successful and good in the run game? No, I don't think they're going to be that because of the personnel, and none of them are really true run stuffers. Like, and if the Jets staff, which they've insinuated, at least maybe I think they've insinuated that, you know, they rather play a guy like Q on pass rush downs. Okay, let's say it is Q playing on more pass rush downs, and the pass rush our primary pass rush defense is Q, JFM, Lawson, and Jacob Martin or Vinnie Curry. That would probably be the best four to me. And if you're trying to keep Q fresh, now you're rotating in what? Nathan Shepard, Solomon Thomas, JFM at DN, and somebody else at, you know, like at the other DN spot in terms of the run defense. I don't have a lot of faith in the interior defensive line. I do have more faith in with guys like JJ coming in, and some more depth. And then on top of that, if you're going to factor in, you know, if we're going to expand past the defensive line, we're talking about a good tackling corner and Sauce and Reed and Whitehead and all that stuff. But just for the defensive line, yeah, a slight improvement just because of familiarity. But I still think they're going to struggle. So a successful year for me, or a successful year to me for this year would be from taking that leap from like what, Scott? I don't know if you know the rankings of last year. I'm going to assume, let's just say 32 because it was terrible, the run defense. If they could take a leap just to like the 23rd best run defense, I think that's massive for the Jets because I think the pass defense is going to be much better. I think they're going to be getting more sacks. I think they're going to be getting more turnovers. So if they can somewhat limit the ground game, that'll be a huge step up. And I think a big part of that is dependent upon the Jets and their offense, which kind of goes back to Sharman's question about good offense being, you know, good defense, et cetera. Because if the Jets let teams get up on them by two scores, if those teams are smart, they're going to start doing what the Pats did. And I talked about this going into the year last year and talking about the Pats matchup in week two. The Pats run a lot of gap and traps and all of that type of stuff and pin and folds and pin and pulls and all that stuff. And I was concerned about the run defense because that's the primary weakness of a 4-3. And then they struggled, and they struggled for the rest of the year because teams are copycats. So if they're going to let teams get up on them quick this year, they're going to have to find a way to combat that. I'm not necessarily sure they have the personnel to do so. So, again, I think being 32nd to 22nd is a large enough leap for this defense to be considered a good defense. Because, listen, that's never going to be the primary strength of this defense where, again, I think the pass rush, the corners are going to be much, much better. So if you're looking at the 22nd run defense, which, again, I don't think they're going to necessarily reach, I think you're looking at a defense that could be average to plus average and making a leap of 10 spots, again, however you quantify that, while losing your best run defender is, again, probably overly optimistic, but we shall see. Again, they will be tested very, very early on that, facing the AFC North right off the jump, which, again, thank you, NFL schedule makers.
Next question comes in from Tom. He says, if you had to bet on any of the Jets rookies to win Rookie of the Year, which one would you bet on considering the current odds? So here are the current odds, Joe, and I talked about this on the show with Walter Cherepinski earlier this week. Garrett Wilson is plus 1,800. Breece Hall is plus 750. And Sauce Gardner and Jermaine Johnson are both plus 1,200. So I said this with Walter. I would absolutely go with Breece Hall. I know that he's got the highest odds. So obviously plus 750, it's definitely less of a cash-in than if, say, Garrett Wilson does it at plus 1,800. But I think Breece Hall, especially this year where there wasn't a blue chip quarterback in the draft and we don't even know for sure that Kenny Pickett's going to start in Pittsburgh, that gives Breece Hall a tremendous chance to really get in there and be the rookie of the year, because typically these running backs produce at a much higher level early on than wide receivers. Sometimes there's exceptions, Ja'Marr Chase being one of them. Usually, though, the rookie of the year on the offensive side of the ball winds up being a quarterback or a running back. Breece Hall is probably the best running back in this draft, best position to have really good numbers year number one. It would be interesting, too, because, Joe, the Jets have had four guys in their history that have won Defensive Rookie of the Year. Eric McMillan did it in 1988. Jonathan Vilma did it in 2004. Sheldon Richardson did it in 2013. And Hugh Douglas did it in 1995. There's never been a Jet that's won Offensive Rookie of the Year, but I think this could be the year. And my issue is, too, with Garrett Wilson, he's got competition for receptions from Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, the two tight ends, even Michael Carter and Breece Hall. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know that Jermaine Johnson's going to make enough splash plays to be Rookie of the Year. I think he has a chance to have a good rookie season, but I don't know that he's going to be having 10, 12 sacks or anything like that, which is what you usually expect from a Rookie of the Year. And Sauce Gardner, I think, can play really well, but you know how that goes. He can have a really good year as a defensive back, but unless he has a ton of interceptions, he probably isn't going to get a lot of Defensive Rookie of the Year votes. So I think Breece Hall is by far the best bet there. And at plus 750, I think it's a really solid value.
Yeah, let's start with the defensive guys. Typically, corners don't win it, and obviously, people are all about the stats with corners. Like Revis's best years are still being underrated because he didn't necessarily have stats, which is ridiculous to me. Because if you're doing your job, you're not going to get thrown at. But people seem to just completely forget that. So, I doubt it'll be Sauce. Typically, like you said, it's a defensive lineman, maybe like a flashy linebacker, but that's even more rare. Past that, you have Jermaine Johnson, who, you know, obviously for us, it's good that we have depth, but at a certain point, like he's going to have to make a massive impact on it. Not a lot of reps. Cause I, at first, if you're telling me, okay, he's a primary run defender, I get that. But right now, you know, 1v1 on the edge, 3rd and 10 as a pass rusher, I'm taking Lawson over him. Obviously, I'm going to take Jacob Martin. I'm going to take Vinnie Curry, which people are going to think it sounds crazy, but let's not think that this kid's a finished product in year one. Like he's going to have to develop. Vinnie Curry's been around. He's good technically. He's good in a limited role. And then same thing with Jacob Martin, who I think is probably honestly a little bit underrated by Jets fans at this point. I actually really like that signing. So JJ is not going to be in all the time on passing downs. Even if you think he's going to be in a little bit more than me, it's still not going to be enough to make that defensive rookie of the year type of impact. Offense, like you said with Garrett Wilson, to me, he's probably pretty easily the 5th or 6th option on this offense. I think initially, you know, Corey Davis is over him. Elijah Moore is over him. Maybe he takes over Corey Davis. You'd say the tight ends, maybe both individually are over him, but if not, at least as a group, they're going to get targeted more than him. And then same thing with the running backs. Maybe individually they're both, they both get more touches than him, but at least as a group. So you're looking at him being, again, the 4th, 5th, 6th option in an offense that is very difficult to learn for receivers. It's easy on quarterbacks, but receivers have to learn a lot of route adjustments and how to read defenses and how to break off the routes, that, you know, adjusting to said defenses and how the corner responds. So it's not a position that is very easy to learn for said rookie. And again, there's a lot of options over him. So I would say no to him. And Breece Hall, I think, is the safer bet. The only one you really have a decent chance at. So that would be the one I'd bet on too. Again, obviously a guy who I think in years past would be a first round running back, paired with what should be a good offensive line and a better run blocking offensive line at their peak than a pass blocking offensive line, with a system that is run heavy with a young quarterback, which also is conducive to a team that runs the ball a little bit more. So he's set up in kind of a perfect storm to get that rookie of the year. And like you mentioned, Scott, another good point is there's not that quarterback this year who's necessarily a shoo-in to take it. It's a very good perfect storm for Breece Hall to take home that offensive rookie of the year or rookie of the year in general.
Joe, last question, and this was inspired by our friend Glenn Naughton, who talked about this a little bit. Here are the players that the Jets have that are making over $10 million in 2022. C.J. Mosley, $17.5 million. Carl Lawson, $15.3 million. Corey Davis, $13.6 million. John Franklin Myers, $12 million. George Fant, $11 million. Quinnen Williams, $10.5 million. Connor McGovern, $10.3 million. Of those players, which ones do you think are likely to come back next year, and which ones do you think are not likely to come back?
Yeah, so it depends. It obviously depends, and again, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but assuming that I have Glenn's feet, I just pulled it up, but I don't have the numbers for next year, but assuming that they can save all of the space that's listed on this list, then yeah, it's a conversation. Again, I'm not completely privy to all the dead cap numbers if they were to cut them, but let's say they save most of the cap. Mosley at about $17 million, there's absolutely no way. I do think that they renegotiate to get him down to, I think, like a reasonable price. I think he's probably more of like a $10, $11 million player at this point, but if they can renegotiate him to, you know, 12, 13, I think it's a conversation, but there's no guarantee he is back. And obviously this all stems around how much value do they have? How much value do they feel like put in the position? What are the chances they feel they can pick up at a guy? Because like, listen, we can't act like, oh, well, yeah, just cut C.J. Mosley. Okay, well, who's replacing him at the same point? So it's all relative to that and what they feel about the 2023 free agency. But, yeah, Mosley's not a shoo-in at that number. I would say absolutely not. Lawson, $15 million, you know, again, and assuming that's similar to next year, you're looking at, you know, you're hoping he gets 10, 12 sacks for that price. Is he going to? Does he have the opportunity to? And at what point does the rotation kind of limit, not limit effectiveness, but how much does the rotation – limit how much you could pay an individual? If you're only playing Lawson 60% of the snaps, does he deserve to make $15 million a year? He better be impactful on the plays he does play. So there's no guarantee he is back. Davis, 13.6. Yeah, it's a little high. And again, depending on the free agent market, how they feel about the draft or the receivers in the draft, I could see him being released. At the same point, listen, guys like Zay Jones getting paid $10 million and Christian Kirk, who one for one, again, I'll have to watch Kirk, but based on my knowledge, both the guys, Corey Davis and Christian Kirk, are similar players. If Corey Davis might be a little bit even better than him, and he's making $17 million. So the receiver market blew up. So Davis getting 13.6 is actually not so bad of a deal. JFM, $12 million. Again, he had a shitty situation last year where the ends get injured and he's forced to end instead of where he's making his bread and butter on the inside. So I think he's probably pretty safe, JFM and Q. Fant, I have a feeling he'll be brought back just because, again, he doesn't have, you know, a lot of tread wasn't taken off the tires, you know, playing backup tight or backup offensive lineman, swing tack, a little bit of tight end for the Seahawks. He's 29-30, but he's a young 29-30, a captain. So I think he's probably brought back, but again, not a shoo-in. And the last two guys, Quinnen, you know, again, I think he's a lock at this point, like exercise a fifth year option, tag him if you have to, figure out what he is, but he'll be back for his, what, next year will be his fourth year or fifth year. And then McGovern, I think $10 million is quite reasonable for what he is. I think, you know, a mid-level to maybe plus-level starting center, which, I think to a certain point with McGovern, when you have guys at GVR playing next to him, it is easy to lump both their plays into one another. So I think him being around guys like Tomlinson and AVT this year will also raise kind of his or people's opinions of McGovern as well. So $10 million for, again, an average to plus average starter, I think is fine for a center. But at the same point, at the same token, do the Jets feel they can replace him? Is he long-term? Because they could be comfortable with a guy, but not feel he's long-term and then replace him. Or they could be, okay, you know, he's not our primary concern this year, but are there replacements? Okay, there's no replacements, we'll keep him. You know, again, it all depends on said market. But yeah, I would say Q's only lock, but I also have strong feeling that JFM and Fant will also be back next year.
That's going to wrap up part three of the mailbag. Visit playlikeajet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel to check out everything we're doing over there. The Thunder from Down Under, Luke Grant, has got some great all-22 breakdowns of all the Jets draft picks. Visit our store, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. We've got the John Franklin Myers, Quinnen Williams, Bless You, Thank You shirt, the Zach Says Go Long shirt, the Zach the Ripper shirt, the Play Like a Jet logo shirt, caps, mugs, hoodies. It's all there, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.